Anna Shackley is a real star on the rise in the cycling world. The 20-year-old seemingly came out of nowhere back in 2021 when, then aged 18, she signed for esteemed cycling team SD Works. Prior to that, she had mostly been focusing on the track with the British National Programme, winning multiple Scottish junior national titles before winning the Elite British Points Race and Team Pursuit titles in 2020. But during lockdown, her coach reached out to the SD Works team manager, and that's where the journey and subsequent upward trajectory stemmed from. Fast forward to now, and the rider is focusing on the road and has an Olympics appearance under her belt after she was picked as the only support rider for Lizzie Danin at the Tokyo Games. But there is no doubting this cyclist's talent and enthusiasm for learning as she aims to develop her skills even more. In this interview, the rider talks all about that quick rise, being involved at an Olympic Games unlike any other, as well as her love for Scotland and the Scottish weather, among plenty of other topics. We hope you enjoy this latest episode of the podcast. Anna, a very, very warm welcome to the podcast. How are things with you at the moment? Because, well, I mean, it's the start of a new year, and I imagine you're building up to quite a lot of things in the world of cycling at the same time.
Yeah, it was a bit of a strange start to the year. It started off good. I went to our first team camp in January, but I had a bit of a crash going down one of the descents, and I got concussed. So I had another 3 weeks off the bike, and it's kind of been a bit of a struggle getting back into things, but things are on the way up, so it's going well so far.
Yeah, I mean, definitely good to hear that things are on the way up, but yeah. How was that as well, like kind of having to deal with that, and so the stop-start nature of wanting just to get stuck in?
It was quite frustrating, and I'm not someone who's very good at doing nothing. Like, even when I'm not training, I like to be busy, so I found that really hard, especially with concussion, just sitting around doing nothing. I thought I was going to die of boredom, but other than that, it was good.
Well, good, and good to see that you've gotten past that as well, and hopefully the boredom side of things have kind of been pushed to the side. We've also got plenty to talk about in this podcast, about your life, your career, and career in cycling specifically as well. But shall we start with, I suppose, the beginning and essentially how you got into the sport? Because I kind of gather it wasn't always plain sailing, and doing my background research, somehow some bobble hats seem to play a part in keeping you in the sport as well, based on the previous interview I saw you do at the same time. So how did kind of your journey in cycling begin?
Oh, I can't remember maybe what I said about bobble hats, but I basically started because my dad coached at my local club called the Glasgow Riders. I started out with some cyclocross and mountain bike because he always loved cycling. I just basically did it because it meant that I got to go along to the club sessions with him. I have to admit, I was quite bad as a youth. Like, I came last in so many races. My dad took me up and down the country, and I think I came last in nearly every part of the country. But probably around about junior level, I got on the Scotland programme, and then I got a coach for the first time and actually started training. And who knew, training made you fast.
I was going to say, is that, I suppose, the point you got a coach, and I suppose it sums up why coaches are so important, but is that kind of the moment it started to click when you have that guide, I suppose, for yourself?
Yeah, I think that definitely made me look into like actually training and focusing on cycling, because before that my family's quite academic, and it was always school first and then cycling after. And then after I got the coach, I started focusing, like I left school and I started focusing more on training. So yeah, I think it kind of became more of a reality that I could actually make cycling a living.
Mm-hmm. Was that, I suppose, one of the things that you always had in the back of your mind, whether you could actually make it into a living, or is that just something that kind of grew the better you got at it?
Yeah, it was always very, very deep in the back of my mind. Like I would always really want to become a professional, but I could not even imagine a few years ago being where I am now. Like I always thought I'd be going to university and doing studies. I just didn't think I would be good enough to ever cycle. So it's still, like, I still have to pinch myself.
Is it still, I suppose, living that dream at the same time that, you know, a lot of people might have those thoughts when they're younger that they can get to kind of do what they really love doing as a career. But for a lot of people, it doesn't happen, unfortunately.
Yeah, definitely. It's like still so surreal. So just living every day, pretty good. Like, I feel like I'm living the dream. I just get to travel, ride my bike. It has its ups and downs, like crashing and everything, but I still think it's better than what I see my friends from school doing.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you touched on sort of the national programs that you've been part of there. And I suppose how key was getting on those, but also being involved in that setup to your own development as a rider? What sort of things or tools did it give you?
Oh, I think it was absolutely key. Like, I don't think I'd be where I am now without the help from Scottish Cycling. And then after that, British Cycling. Like, it's not just like having the coaches and the training and the equipment, but the connections it gives you to know people and like to move further forward in cycling helps so much. And just to learn from other riders and people more experienced on how it is to be an athlete as well.
Yeah, definitely. How much do you think it changed you as a person? How much did you learn, I suppose, as a person rather than a rider?
I suppose I learned more that I'm quite determined. So I don't like people telling me I can't do something, or yeah, I'm very stubborn in that way. So I was just, I'm very driven with my training. Like if my coach puts in training and like gives a vague of like powers that I need to hit, I'm like, have to hit the top, otherwise it's a fail. So I feel like in that way I realized I'm quite like structure, but other than that, I'm not the most organized person, which I also had to learn, because like I moved with the British program, I moved away straight after school and was just living in a house with all the other girls, and it was the first time living away from home, and like that's kind of throws you in the deep end and you have to learn adult things.
Well, exactly. So, it's like I suppose most people going to university, going to college for the very first time, it's learning how to adult your life.
Yeah, and also the fact that like I see my friends from uni and they wake up at 1 o'clock most days. They don't think, like with being an athlete, you also have to think about other things, like just being generally healthy and like eating good food and cooking for yourself and all the stuff like that. Also, I had to learn how to do taxes this year without an accountant, which was very, very stressful. And I did put it in about 2 days before the deadline. But
I was going to say, how's that getting your head around it? Because even now I'd be just stumped.
I was filling in the form. I'm like, these questions are absolutely pointless. But yeah.
It's all part of the parcel of, like I say, adult life, and you're just so naive to it when you're younger, and then something hits you when you suddenly get into those later stages of your life. I was going to say as well that sort of wanting to or leaning more to becoming a professional road rider, because you had the track riding background as well. Was there something about riding on the road that just appeals to you more? Or whether you just get more out of that rather than sticking to the track?
Yeah, I think me physically as a rider, I am more suited to the roads, but I always preferred like training wise. I love training on the roads. I think just exploring new roads and just cycling far. And yeah, you can look around at the scenery, like even in races, like racing in more scenic areas always makes me so much more happier. So I really like just I'm more attracted to the road.
Yeah, was that almost from like a kind of channel it or relate it to saying what I like running for? By no means I'm an elite runner at all, but I like running because I get to see stuff. And yeah. If you've had like a stressful day and it's quite a nice kind of detox, if you like, from being the screen all day, it's the same sort of thing for you.
Like I'm usually always happier after my rides and just like being outside, I think, because I just, especially living in Scotland, and there's a lot of weather, but even in this of weathers, I will still rather cycle outside than inside in the trainer. Like I always go out because it's, I will much prefer it. Well, and I don't know, I think there's something quite nice about battling through the wind and rain and being like, yes,
I know, I can vouch for that. Seeing as my mum is from Stornoway, so the Isle of Lewis, fully accustomed to the weather up there. And well, I used to live in Dundee as well, so I know exactly what you're talking about.
And on the islands, it's like, oh, the wind's insane.
You get battered.
Yeah, there's no trees there because nothing can grow because the wind's just like battering.
Absolutely. I was going to say, Scotland is your home. How important is it to you? Because I imagine you still get to go back quite regularly, despite having, I presume, hopping about here, there and everywhere cycling.
Yeah, like definitely last year, everyone would be asking where I lived and I basically lived out a bag the whole year. I didn't, especially with Brexit and coronavirus, like flights were cancelled and I had quarantine everywhere. So I did just live out of a bag, but I'd always say like Scotland is my home, no matter where I stay. Which sounds a little bit cringy, but I'm very proud that I can say, like, the fact that I have the Scottish flag on my helmet always makes me so happy.
Exactly. It's little details like that. Speaking of COVID as well, and obviously lockdown in 2020, a lot of us probably had our own experiences of that period. And it's fair to say for you, and certainly, well, with regards to your coach, Emma Trott, at the time, reaching out to the SD Works manager, Danny Stamm, and that kind of started off this whole whirlwind that has been for you since 2020 of joining the team and having this amazing trajectory really in your career. Does it feel like a whirlwind still?
Yes, yeah, so I think this has been the first time where it's kind of settled down and I can, like, I'm now, like, there's new girls on the team and now I've already been on it for a year, so I feel less
not the newbie
like the new
anymore
person. Yeah, it's quite a nice feeling, but everything is still quite like, I'm still learning so much. It's still a bit of a whirlwind, but nothing compared to last year. It was just insane. Everything was just thrown at me, but I loved it.
And in terms of things you learned then from last year, what kind of things do you think you picked up just by, I suppose, being thrown in the deepest of deep ends?
Well, it was just like absolutely everything about cycling. Like you learn like those new people and like learning just people in the bunch, and I'd never actually properly ridden as a team before, so learning all of that, all the jobs you have to do, just living as a professional, and things like traveling. I traveled alone before, but nothing to the extent where you're in a foreign country and you're having to get a taxi by yourself and get from one airport to another airport and working things out like that. Like just very adult stuff.
Absolutely. And like you say, the COVID regulations changing on a very regular basis probably doesn't help with a lot of things like that at the same time.
Yeah. Oh, I think I was constantly having to look at government regulations on travel from the UK to certain places, and it's always some form of ban that they had us on. So like my first race was Binda, and Italy had banned all UK passengers to go to Italy, so I had to fly to Belgium, and then I got the team bus where their service courses and drove that down to Italy, because obviously they don't control the land borders. So that was how I had to get into each country. I had to drive most places.
It's time consuming to say the least.
Yeah. But less stressful. You don't get stopped at borders. So
definitely. I was kind of looking at this year now, not being the newbie. How do you kind of see your role? How's it developed from when you first came in at the deep end? And now it's, I suppose, kind of you've adapted more to the team and you're kind of growing your own role, I suppose.
Yeah, so hopefully I can play more of a part in helping my teammates this year, because last year it was just learning on what I had to do and when, and when I should be doing what. So hopefully I know a bit more now to help in the results, and then yeah, just see how it goes. And I really want to do one of the bigger tours, so hope, like, I'll see how I am closer to the time, and that'd be really good. I really want to do the Giro, so.
Yeah. For people who might not be in the know, do you want to just describe kind of the setup that is around you and I suppose the opportunities that it presents itself being part of a large team like this, as opposed to, I suppose, what you had before you actually joined the team?
Well, I think especially now the women's teams are getting really professional, so we're getting more Swannies. So we usually have two at a race. We've now got a really good food coach who comes to a lot of the tours to cook for us, which helps enormously, because some of the food you get at races is not nice. It's like, oh, it's soggy pasta with maybe some chicken if you're lucky. So it's really good having that. And then obviously we have the mechanics and the DS as well. And we've got Anna van der Breggen, who's now another one of our DSs, which will be really exciting to have her in the car this year as well.
Absolutely. And what talking about her specifically as well, because obviously she was a teammate when you first joined and now she's stepped into this role. How has that changed things at all, or is she also adapting to this new role at the same time?
Yeah, it's strange. She's gone into the role very quickly. Like, it doesn't feel strange at all. Like, it's strange in the fact that it doesn't feel really strange at all. The fact that she's just Anna's now just a DS. And I think even by the end of the season last year, she was already kind of floating into that role.
Sounds like a very, very natural fit, though.
Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely. Kind of moving the conversation on to the Olympics. And again, I suppose COVID measures and all sorts of things kind of play a part here because I think that affected, well, large parts of it. We're seeing it now with the Winter Olympics as well, aren't we? But certainly when we were watching the Olympics and covering the Olympics at the time, it had a big old impact. And you being out there, you can now call yourself an Olympian being picked to as part of it. Still great, but I mean, what was that whole experience like? Because I think, do you kind of know in the back of your mind that as great as it is, obviously, it's still weird for a lot of people?
Yeah, I think it was also, we kept getting told when we were there that this isn't like a normal Olympics. Like, don't worry, if you go to a normal one, it's so much better. Because it was a bit strange, in fact, it just kind of, to me, felt like any other race. Because it was just, I was in a race hotel. We didn't really leave the hotel, and then you raced, and then you went home. So we didn't really, like, people always asked me how the Olympics went, and we didn't really get any of the flourishes apart from the huge amount of kit that we got given. Apart from that, like, it was just like any other race with less people in it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, even the race itself was a bit weird in the way it played out, wasn't it? But I suppose, is that, again, you can kind of take that, learn from it, and then I suppose build on it. And is that very much kind of your target for the future is to eventually get back to, I suppose, an Olympics where you can enjoy the experience?
Yeah, I'd say it is maybe a goal, but I've never really thought of the Olympics as something that I would want to aim for. Right? I think with road cycling as well, because it's such a reduced field, it's not really like the pinnacle of racing. Like, I'd much rather win a World Tour race, like maybe a stage in like the Tour de France or the Giro, rather than be maybe go back to the Olympics. Not that I wouldn't want to go, but it's probably not one of my priorities.
Yeah, exactly. Do you think, again, you've learned anything from that experience? And I suppose, well, being the support rider to Lizzie Deignan at the same time and getting kind of that feedback and being involved in that side of things, whether you've picked up anything that you can take onto the normal stage, or whether you're aiming for those big tours for yourself as a rider or as a person at the same time.
Yeah, no, I did learn. I learned a lot from Lizzie. And I really, because we were stuck in a hotel room together for three weeks. I did enjoy that. But yeah, you could see like the bigger riders, just how much pressure is put on them and what you expect, and how it's really interesting to see how Lizzie handles it all as well, which it's quite interesting. And it's always nice learning and talking to the older riders, and like if you think you have a problem and then they're like, oh no, it's nothing, and then they have all these other bigger issues and you're like, yeah, my problems aren't big.
Help put things into context, I suppose.
Yeah,
absolutely. Career-wise then, and we kind of touched on it already with the tools, but are those kind of your main aims, kind of your hopes for the future, or is there anything in you'd really like to target for yourself?
Yeah, I suppose like we get asked all the time what races we want to do, but I think I only had 1 year so far as a professional, so I've only ever done the races once. But yeah, I still like to see what I want to achieve, but I think probably the stages in the tour and maybe eventually winning one of them would probably be my biggest goal.
Yeah, definitely. Well, it certainly seems to be going in the right direction as well as things are continuing. Yeah. What in terms of yourself then, what kind of things do you want to work on to try and make those dreams or those aims more of a reality? Is there any types of things that you need to develop in yourself?
Oh, these are hard questions. I think I probably need to get better at the communication on the bike between, like, I'm just not used to communicating with a team, so I think that would be good. And just learning also training and when to train hard and when to maybe back off a little bit and focus on more of the efforts than just the general riding.
Exactly, but I suppose naturally that will come along and develop the more you work with a team, and that just come with the more experience that you get at the same time.
Make sure you follow Sportspiel on social media. Search for Sportspiel Pod on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or on LinkedIn.
Obviously on this podcast, or for long-time listeners of this podcast, they'll kind of know how important women in sport is to us as a show. That's why we bang on about it so much, because we just feel it's A, incredibly important, and B, just needs to be shouted about a lot more than it currently is. And I mean, there's so many brilliant role models, particularly in cycling. Lizzie Dane as an example, Laura Kenny as another one. Another example. How important have those role models, do you think, been to yourself growing up, and how important do you think they are currently to maybe other people or other young kids growing up wanting to aspire to something in the future?
Well, I think just anyone seeing like a female, like when you're growing up and you see a woman doing what the men can do, it's always inspiring to every gender. So I think it's like, for me, I didn't really think of myself in any role model at all. And then I go back and I help with my local club when I'm home, and all the girls are like really excited to see me and they're asking for my kit. And it's just really nice to see, and it hits home, like, you are kind of inspiring people to ride. So that helps a lot, like just putting, maybe posting a little bit more on Instagram and putting yourself out there just to make sure that people can maybe find a sport that they love doing and do what they want. So I think, yeah, inspiring women in sport is always good.
Yeah. Does that ever get to sink in properly? Just, I suppose, the impact you have on others when you do come back to the club, or, you know, when they see that little piece of kit that represents so much more?
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of pretend that it doesn't, because I don't know, I don't really like being in the spotlight that much. But yeah, it's quite surreal sometimes. I'm like, oh, people know who I am, like, getting asked to do podcasts, didn't think that would happen. So yeah, it's still quite a little bit unreal.
Oh yeah, exactly. And I suppose touching on the whole putting yourself out there as well. And this is a conversation that again has sprung up with quite a few different athletes, I suppose, linking more with, say, the social media side of things, and, you know, building a connection through that. But it does require people to put a lot of themselves out there. How's that balance for you?
So I'm not good at Instagram at all, and so some of my teammates, like Demi Vollering, is so good at it. Like, anytime I go on a ride with her, I love it, because she just takes really, really good photos and videos, and she posts it all on Instagram, and like, people love that, and I'm not very good at it, but I do like it when I get tagged by one of them, because then my followers go up. So yeah, I think it's definitely something I like do need to work on, but I've that's another thing I learned about cycling. It's not just about racing and training. You also have to make sure you represent your sponsors as well, like the whole team, all their sponsors are your sponsors as well, so you have to put them in good light and post about them. And yeah, kind of cycling has a big social media behind it, and that's where the money comes in, especially for the women's side. If you want more money to come into the sport, then you have to kind of look after the sponsors that are putting money towards you.
Exactly. I suppose it can be easy to sometimes forget that you're promoting yourself at the same time, as well as your sport. If that's kind of something that you're still kind of, I suppose, juggling with and trying to get right. And I suppose dedicating that time to it as well.
Yeah, you have to think about what you are posting. So you can't, like, obviously there's been quite some controversy with maybe someone tweeting about something which necessarily isn't right. And then, yeah, so you do have to think, like, is this good? Will this be good for my team? Because they are your employer and you don't want to upset them.
Yeah, absolutely. For yourself growing up as well, did seeing stuff on social media have any kind of impact on you? Whether it's like, kind of, you know, that inspiring side of things.
Yeah, I feel like social media impacts everything. Like, it's hard to get away from it, but I don't really remember growing up and looking at cyclists and being inspired. The only inspiration I remember getting from cyclists was always watching the Tour de France when I was younger, no matter what. And so I suppose that's probably where I got the inspiration to cycle, was just from watching races like that. And I did a lot of mountain biking, watching all of the World Cups as well. And we have a downhill World Cup in Fort William in Scotland, so I remember going watching that. So
yeah, exactly. Kind of what then in terms of yourself on the calendar, what's kind of next for you calendar wise, whether it's training side of things or competing side of things?
So depending just on how my recovery comes out of the concussion, I'm hoping to start with Strada in Italy. So that would be really good, because I have always dreamed of doing that race. I think I still need to work a bit on my gravel riding, so we'll see how that goes. And then hopefully on to Binder after that, and then more of the hillier classics at the end of April. And then I'll be doing like the tours and the mostly quite similar to last year in my calendar, pretty hilly races, which I'm not complaining about. That's always the ones that I enjoy.
Yeah, absolutely. And I imagine, well, certainly from myself looking on at, say, the tours and things like that, and the absolutely grueling workout schedule you must be going through beforehand as well, just to get your body in the best shape possible. Is that kind of a fair assessment of just how much work off the road goes into things as well?
Team camp. So I'm on team camp at the minute, and they're always pretty hard camps with our team. But I really enjoy being with the team here. Like, even though the training days can be really hard, like, just being with the girls and bonding, I think, helps a lot with our racing.
Yeah, building that camaraderie at the same time too.
Yeah, you go through hard training together so you can race together.
Absolutely. My final few questions then. Biggest challenges you've had so far, from, I suppose, when you first started to where you are now?
Oh, I think understanding that things do go like training doesn't always go well, and you have bad races, and you just have to kind of carry on and don't get so down. There's also the fact that the year, the calendar, like the racing calendar is so long. So if you have a bad race and you think of it too much and it affects your other races, you still got a long time to improve. And like, hopefully your cycling career is also quite long. So being bad the first year is fine. It's all about learning. And even all the older girls above me are still learning. So there's no rush. I think just calm down.
So everyone can get a little bit impatient and aiming for perfection a lot of times, regardless of what you're doing in life, and just trying not to let those bad days, I suppose, hang around in the back of your mind.
Yeah, and the fact that you can have a bad day, you don't need to be going well the entire time. As long as you can do at least one thing for your team during the race, then that's better than nothing.
Absolutely. Biggest highlights so far?
Oh, I think just traveling to different places that I've never traveled before. I love, especially during the pandemic when a lot of people have been stuck inside, and I kind of been the complete opposite. I've been traveling and living in Girona for a while and moving around. I absolutely love that. Like, I do quite like living out of a bag.
And getting to see tons of places that I suppose most people wouldn't get the chance to at the same time.
Traveling to Tokyo, that's the first time I've been on a long haul flight, so that was entertaining. And British Cycling put us in business class for the way out, so that was great. It was luxury.
Well, business class sounds very very good.
On the way back wasn't quite as good, but the way out was really nice.
Absolutely. Well, the hope and, you know, sort of the anticipation of getting to actually compete and all that sort of stuff. My final one then, kind of, if you can picture yourself in say 5 to 10 years time, is there, can you, or where do you see yourself in 5 to 10 years time, or what do you hope to have achieved?
As an athlete, you're always striving for that winning feeling, so hopefully I've maybe won something. Even if not, like, if I'm still on a professional team riding my bike, I think I'll be pretty happy.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said earlier, the way the trajectory has gone so far, certainly the last couple of years, I think it's fair to say that there will hopefully be some victories along the way.
Yeah, you can always hope.
Oh, definitely. But like I say, there's quite rightly, I suppose, a lot of excitement about where your career is going to go. So thank you so much, Anna, for coming on to the show and telling us a little bit about yourself, telling us all about the weather in Scotland, which plenty of people can relate to. Exactly. Yeah. Everyone visit. It's really nice on that one day of the year where the sun comes out.
Well, everyone will be coming for Worlds next year, so get ready for the lovely, lovely weather.
Yep, bring umbrellas, just in case. But ultimately, good luck as well for the season ahead, and hopefully no more crashes or concussions at the same time as well. And we hope everything goes well on kind of that quest to get into the tours and to win some things as well. So thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
A huge thank you to Anna and to SD Works for helping to organise this interview for our podcast. We hope everyone enjoyed it, and we wish Anna all the very best for the upcoming season. No doubt we'll be seeing even more news reports of her successes in no time at all. A huge thank you as well to all our listeners as ever while we are away. Episodes will be getting back to our normal rate soon, and we can't wait to share more interviews with you. Another word from me, on April the 3rd, I'll be running like a madman through the streets of London, taking part in the London Landmarks Half Marathon. I'll be raising funds for our charity partner, the Mintridge Foundation, who of course do brilliant work using sport as a tool to help children realise their potential. If you could spare any money for a donation, it would be hugely appreciated. The fundraising page is in the show notes of this episode. That's it from me, everyone. Do follow us on social media at SportSpielPod, and shout about the pod if you liked it. You'll be hearing from us again very, very soon. Bye-bye.